I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Israeli Vice Consul General Yuri Reznik, discussing the failure of the recent peace process, the BDS movement, and much more. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. While summer doesn't officially begin till June 21st, in many parts of the country, it actually starts with this very Memorial Day weekend. Kids get out of school, temperatures rise, it begins to feel like a season for sun and water and freedom. That's how I remember it from my childhood anyway, when the last days of public school signaled total release from responsibility. Ah, those blissful last few days of school. I believe that in my memory they were actually more pleasurable than the summer vacations that followed sometimes. You know, it can be the idea of freedom that matters most, not the reality of it. For most working people, summer is not vacation at all, but there's a certain sense around an American synagogue, particularly among religious school families, that they are taking the summer off, from Judaism anyway, and they'll see you again when school starts in the fall. I don't know at what point people began to feel that Judaism was a 9-month-a-year experience, but somehow that message has been communicated universally in our congregational life, in nearly every American Reform and Conservative synagogue I've heard of, and there are definitely families with whom I celebrated at the Siyum concluding ceremonies for religious school that I won't see again until late August or even September. I don't know what to do about this exactly, and neither does anyone else in the shul business, so far as I know. It's not that we don't preach the message that Judaism is a year-round commitment, a way to experience holiness in life every day, and I don't think it's even a conscious decision that people make to avoid religion when the weather warms up. It's just that somewhere along the way, American Jews learned or decided that religion, or at least Judaism, was a pediatric exercise, something to give kids to make sure they got the right values, holidays, and rituals, and perhaps married the right flavor of person, and that they themselves, that is us, the parents and even the grandparents, were exempt from actually experiencing the same things they required of their kids. That's why the best supplemental religious schools in the world, and many of ours are very fine, can only do so much. Children learn and know the prayers and holidays. They can chant from the Torah and sing about Israel and the festivals. They can celebrate their wonderful Jewish identity. But when parents choose to just drop kids off and split for a free morning, and when they don't model positive Jewish behaviors or provide Jewish experiences regularly at home, it sends a very strong message. Do as I say, not as I do. This religion is just kid stuff. Grown-ups have more important things to do, like work out or go shopping, meet friends, or participate in non-Jewish activities. Now, that's not what we rabbis preach, of course, but it certainly is a message that comes across loud and clear, especially in the summertime. Summertime equals no religious school, which equals no Judaism. And that's a shame. Because in truth, it's during the more relaxed pace of summer that we can experience some of the very best parts of Jewish life more fully. The home celebration of Shabbat dinner, the opportunity to study Torah creatively in a less pressured environment. When kids don't have to rush from chorus to ballet to baseball to debate to choir to student government to karate to homework, they can actually experience life at a more human pace. And if you take the trouble to have them shut down their iPhones and other social media devices for a little while and have real family time, well, that gives them time to explore and enhance their relationship with our magnificent Jewish tradition, and for us to do so with them. At our own congregation, Temple Emmanuel, we celebrate Shabbat in the summer with Chardonnay Shabbat services, wine and cheese and fruit at 5 o'clock, a one-hour Kabbalat Shabbat service at 5:45, and then go home, have Shabbat dinner with your family afterwards, or even go out to eat. It's a great way in the heat of summer to chill and enjoy being Jewish. And you don't have to get up early on Sunday morning to do it. Shabbat is an ideal opportunity to enjoy being with family and friends, talk, eat, sing, share life in a way that goes well beyond Facebook posts or Instagram. There is no way to tweet Shabbat. Spending device-free family and friend time is a unique way to add meaning, beauty, and holiness into your life. You might actually enjoy your family members again. Anyway, to play us in on this theme of the Sabbath, here's a cut from the new and quite wonderful CD, Armon Bizman, by Sam Golden and Friends, the song of welcome for the Sabbath, Lecha Dodi.
Lecha Dodi.
That was Lecha Dodi from Armon Bizman, new Friday night service created by Sam Golden and Bob Hanshaw. Well, this is Memorial Day weekend, once a solemn, serious time to commemorate our war dead, now a good excuse to start summer vacation. It's true that the actual observance of Memorial Day has declined to the point that it seems to represent not a lot more than a good weekend to start having barbecues and pool parties, shop for bargains at department stores, or head off to cooler weather somewhere. But that's actually a bit of a shame, for remembering our honored dead is a moral responsibility, and it has great resonance in Jewish tradition. The American Memorial Day began in 1866 in New York State, just a year after the end of the Civil War, when communities began to observe a Decoration Day to honor the dead of that great and really terrible conflict. Within a couple of years, the observance became national and near universal, a sign of the broad sense of loss that the terrible American Civil War had created. While the concept of this specific American Memorial Day may go back to the 1860s, the idea of having time to remember and honor the dead is typical of Judaism and has been for many hundreds of years. Four times a year, we Jews observe a special service called Yizkor, Remembrance. It allows all of us who have lost loved ones to gather together and remember their lives and their meaning to us. This happens four times a year with Yisker services on Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot, which is coming up in about a week and a half, the holiday of Shavuos. In addition, there are two specifically Jewish versions of Memorial Day that are more contemporary commemorations, Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, and Yom HaZikaron, Israeli Memorial Day, both in the late spring. You could say that we Jews have a kind of affinity for somber observances of Memorial Days because we have so often lost people early under tragic circumstances. I urge you to take a few moments this weekend, remember those who, in Lincoln's timeless words, gave their lives that that nation, our nation, might live. To continue this theme, here's a song of remembrance, Zacharti Lach, Remember the Covenant We Uphold, a classic setting by Louis Lewandowski. That was a choral version of Zacharti Lach, Remember Us, for this Memorial Day weekend. The surprisingly effective Middle East peace process led by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry came crashing down a couple of weeks ago. Find out why. And the other areas in which Israel is experiencing both successes and challenges from the highly articulate and perceptive Vice Consul General of Israel, Uri Resnick, when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Uri Resnick, is the Deputy Consul General for Israel in Los Angeles and has had an interesting career, originally from Ottawa, Canada. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So, media news stories, the failure of the peace process, it's the fault of Israel for building settlements, it's the fault of the Palestinians for not being courageous.
I never thought it was going to work. Tell me a little bit, is there an official position on this John Kerry-led peace process?
Well, look, we were engaged in this process in great earnest. The Prime Minister took some very, very difficult and courageous decisions as part of this process. We were very much hoping that the Secretary of State's initiative would produce results. Israel released, under the Prime Minister's direction, a great many Palestinian terrorists, convicted murderers, because of a genuine desire to make this work and to finally broach some of the final status issues and reach an agreement. We were there in good faith. Unfortunately, we can't say the same for our Palestinian counterparts. And ultimately, the steps that they took and that Mahmoud Abbas, President Abbas, took to now establish a unity government with Hamas, which of course is recognized not only by Israel as a terrorist organization, this is an obvious reflection of the lack of good faith that we see on the Palestinian side in these negotiations, and also the fact of the material breach of the Oslo Accords that occurred when he decided to petition 15 international organizations to join them. So we unfortunately we're at the position now where we have to really rethink where we stand and how to go from here.
I have a theory, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, that the only time that actual progress, substantive progress, and durable treaties are made with Israel and its neighbors, or even anywhere in the Middle East, is when both sides are fairly desperate.
Well, look, I don't know if desperate is the word. I think that a peace agreement is certainly in Israel's interests, it's in the interests of our children and ourselves, and of course our grandchildren. The same is true of the Palestinians, the Palestinian society. It's in everybody's genuine interest. But we don't see, to be frank, we don't see a ripeness on the Palestinian side to make the kinds of concessions and reach the kind of agreement that would be necessary to make it work. They haven't even agreed to recognize Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people, as our right to exist as a Jewish state. I mean, it's not even something that really ought properly to be a condition for anything. It ought to be obvious,
right,
that if we're talking about a two-state solution, a state of Palestine, and a Palestinian state living side by side with Israel, the Jewish state, this is an obvious sine qua non. And the fact that it has become a sticking point, I think, is a very, very troubling and telling indication of what we're up against.
That they're not ready to make a deal. Do you think that Prime Minister Netanyahu is ready to make a deal?
I think so. I think Prime Minister Netanyahu, in his second term, in the Bar-Ilan speech, made a very, very clear statement about his support for a two-state solution. He's reiterated this many times. These major, major concessions, and several years ago also with the moratorium on building, which went on for 10 months and produced nothing but vacillation and procrastination on the Palestinian side, if not worse. And of course now this latest process where we released so many convicted murderers and terrorists, these are concrete reflections of our desire to move this forward. But we have to have some kind of common ground to move it forward on. And I think we just don't see that.
We will talk much more with Deputy Consul General Rory in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Two Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that have been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome a recurring feature of Two Jewish, Haikus for Jews from Zen Judaism. Wet moss on old stones, lying in the grass, I ponder whom to sue. And the Shiva visit. So sorry about your loss. Now, back to my problems. Those were haikus for Jews, two koans, koans of Zen Judaism. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So we are headed for summer vacation season in America. Schools start to get out, parents go away, people leave the desert for the beach, or they do staycations at hotels, and kids aren't in school for a couple of months. But that's not how it works in Israel. Can you talk a little bit about the Israeli school schedule? And
yeah. So when Israel was established, and so there was a decision to do to set the curriculum of the school according to the Jewish holidays. So, and to take only like July and August like a vacation, 2 months of vacation, and to start like September 1st and to end June 30th. And some of them also relate to the matriculation exams and all the finals, but most of the vacation are during the Jewish holidays, you know, for in Israel, 3 weeks for Passover, almost 2 weeks for high holidays. So most of the vacation are during the Jewish holidays. And during the July and August, most of the kids will, there's not such a common like camp thing in Israel, maybe day camp, like 5 hours a day, right. Like 5 meters from your house, 5 hours. That's it. There's no
sleepaway.
Yeah. I really envy of you, like a parent, like two months or three weeks
to send your kid away and they're getting a great Jewish environment and you don't have to see them for that time. You just have to write them.
Yeah. Let me share with you something very nice that Yuval, my daughter, told me. She said, Ima, I really need 3 months vacation 4 times a year. I said, me too. Yeah. So
out of the mouths of babes comes great wisdom.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different, and you know the reality is 2/10 in Israel, so worker can take like 5 days vacation, and they will go to Eilat, on a worse or a great case, they will go to Turkey or, you know,
Turkey, so, Morocco.
Yeah,
even.
Yeah, but not more than we can afford ourselves more than a week vacation with the kids and some of us.
Most people, yeah. So I also note that when I was living in Israel, Sukkot, the Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of Sukkot or the intermediate days of Pesach are big vacation weeks.
Yeah, because the religious people, this is the only time that they can really, really, you know, drive and travel in Israel, because Shabbatot, it's for the secular.
Yeah, Shabbat.
And Chol HaMoed, it's for the, yeah.
Chol HaMoed is for the religious
All
people.
All the Israeli people is outside, like for the, you know, few weeks ago at Pesach Chol HaMoed, more than
one point five million
each day visited all kind of parks. It was amazing,
oh,
amazing. Just imagine how much trash they lift.
Yeah, I've been in Israel. I know.
Yeah.
Well, very different schedule, beautiful in its own way. Maybe next week we'll talk about population in Israel, which has been a hot topic in the news. Thanks, Oshrat.
Thank you. We'll talk next week. Litrot.
When we come back on To Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Last week we started talking about the prevalence of anti-Semitism in Europe, you know, long after the Holocaust, and how it can exist almost anywhere. Let's get a little more specific. You talked last week about, you know, it's not right to pretend it's never going to happen again, or that it couldn't happen, or that there's no anti-Semitism. But it can lead to Jewish groups in particular, not just us, but primarily us, being hypersensitive to the issue of anti-Semitism. There was this weird flyer circulated in Donetsk in Ukraine that became a huge story and now is disappearing quickly, too. Let's talk about our perceptions of anti-Semitism.
Right. Well, I think I concluded last week by saying we need to be wary, but not too wary, not overly wary, because the example you gave of the flyer in Donetsk was a tiny incident perpetrated by three guys against one group of Jews leaving a worship service. And it was interpreted by Jewish organizations all over the world as the policy of the new Russian government that was taking over, the pro-Russian groups that were taking over in various parts of eastern Ukraine. So, you know, a little quick fact check here is, yes, east of the Dnieper, the country known as Ukraine, is largely Russian. And there are people who are separatists or autonomous or who want to join Russia. Or there's a whole range of opinions. There are also people, ethnic Russians, who are perfectly happy with being part of Ukraine. It's not a clear and obvious choice for everybody. It's not black and white. But on the question of anti-Semitism, both Russia and Ukraine, which for many years were one and the same, effectively. I mean, Russia incorporated, swallowed up Ukraine and ruled it for at least 350 years. And Ukraine, Belarus, and the sort of Pale of Settlement is where most Jews who lived in the Tsarist domains were allowed to live. They weren't allowed to move into Russia proper, like St. Petersburg or Moscow, unless they had very special skills. If they were doctors or lawyers or great violinists, they might be allowed to move into Russia proper. But otherwise, they were kept in the sort of borderlands, and the borderlands were hotbeds of anti-Semitism to an extent that didn't exist in Russia itself, because there were not enough Jews to generate that kind of
anti-Semitism. Yeah, everybody says, well, our ancestors came from Russia. What they really mean is they came from the Pale of Settlement and those areas on the edges of Russia.
Right, and they mostly came in a very short period of time, 20 or 30 years following the pogroms of the early 1880s,
yeah, like
which
the
followed the assassination
the
of the Tsar.
Right.
And in the years between like 1885 and 1905, several million Jews fled the Tsar's domains, largely the Pale of Settlement, and moved, if they could, to the United States, and if they couldn't, to other places, because they thought of us as the golden Medina, the golden country, the dream paradise. And most American Jews can trace their ancestors to that particular population shift.
So all of that's true, and maybe next week we'll explore the Jews who stayed behind and what that has meant for today's potential anti-Semitism in this complicated political environment.
Perfect. I look forward to that.
Thanks, Tom. It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. A Jew and an Arab go into a bakery. The Arab steals three pastries and puts them in his pocket. He says to the Jew, "See how good I am? The owner didn't see anything." The Jew says to the Arab, "That's remarkable, but I'm going to show you an honest way to get the same result." He goes to the owner of the bakery and says, "Give me a pastry and I'll show you a magic trick." Intrigued, the owner accepts and gives him a pastry. The Jew swallows it and asks for another. The owner gives him another. Then the Jew asks for a third pastry and eats that too. The owner is starting to wonder where the magic is and says, "What did you do with the pastry?" And the Jew replies, "Look in the Arab's pocket." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, we chant the second portion of the book of Numbers, Naso, which includes a remarkable blessing. The Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, is really three distinct brachot, three separate prayers, with which the ancient priests were commanded to bless the people. From its inception, this three-part blessing has had exceptional importance. The Torah quotes God as saying, "With this blessing you will place my name on the people of Israel, v'samu et shemi." That is, this very blessing is so important it conveys God's presence among us and offers God's protection to us. The blessing was given by the Kohanim, the highest class of priests, those who were entrusted with the service of the tabernacle and temple. That is, to our ancestors, it was exactly this triple bracha that brought God to us. When the priest chanted it at one of the pilgrimage festivals, it conveyed divine acceptance and presence as nothing else could. We still use this blessing at every joyous life cycle event, and it remains powerful. The text is, "May God bless you and guard you. May the light of God's presence shine on you and grace you. May God's presence turn to you and grant you peace." In essence, the Birkat Kohanim asks God to supply our most important needs. The majority of the interpretations of this portion see the first blessing as a request for physical safety and health, the second blessing asking for material needs to be satisfied, and the third seeking spiritual comfort and confidence. Without any one of these blessings, our lives become challenging. With all three, we are assured of true quality in life. After thousands of years, those three elements, safety, grace, and peace, remain central to our lives and a true gift from God. May you be blessed with each of these, with all of these, this week. Well, Israel is always a blessing to Jews, and in the wake of the failure of the latest peace process, we are pleased to be able to explore just where Israel sits now with Vice Consul General Uri Resnick, whose expertise sheds light on all the major issues facing the Jewish state, when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
I was 15 when I started my first business, and I never looked back. When it came time for college, I looked for a university that would foster my entrepreneurial spirit and that also had a sense of community. ASU's W.P. Carey School of Business ranks among the best in the nation, and the several Jewish organizations on campus make it easy for ASU to become a home away from home. At ASU, I'm upholding the traditions of my family while pursuing my dreams, and as CEO of Simple, I'm well on my way. I'm Arthur Steingart, and I'm a Sun Devil. ASU. Dream it. Do it. Visit asu.edu.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Lots of stories these days about the continually escalating PR war between Israel, her allies, some of them misguided, and those who wish to demonize her. In Washington, D.C., Pamela Geller, the popular American anti-Muslim blogger, has escalated her PR campaign against Islam by plastering 15-foot-long message boards in that spirit on many Washington buses. Her new offering shows a photo of Adolf Hitler and the Mufti of Jerusalem, the spiritual leader of Palestinian Muslims in the first half of the 20th century. Sponsored by Geller's American Freedom Defense Initiative, the ad is headlined, "Islamic Jew Hatred, It's in the Quran." And it includes a photo of the Mufti of Jerusalem in the 1940s, Haj Amin al-Husseini, having a conversation with Hitler, whom he did support avidly during World War II and throughout the Holocaust. This ad began running on 20 Metro buses in the U.S. Capitol last week and will remain on display until the middle of June. Geller's campaign follows one of the exact same size and shape by American Muslims for Palestine, whose message read, "We're sweating April 15th so Israelis don't have to. Stop U.S. aid to Israel's occupation." An allusion to U.S. aid to Israel connected to the April 15th tax day here in America. That ad included a cartoon of Uncle Sam waving an Israeli flag. Geller's organization described AMP's ad as one that engaged in Jew-hating. AMP described Geller's ad as an instance of countering political speech with racist, Islamophobic speech. Meanwhile, across the country at my alma mater, UCLA, following months of contentious debate, Chancellor Jean Block condemned efforts by pro-Palestinian groups to bar student council candidates from participating to trips to Israel sponsored by pro-Israel groups. The target of the UCLA chancellor's criticism was a student-drafted joint statement on ethics, which asked student council candidates, if elected, to refrain from participating in trips to Israel organized by AIPAC, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL that is, and Aish International's Hasbara Fellowships. The statement was supported by a diverse group of pro-Palestinian student organizations at UCLA, including Students for Justice in Palestine, Muslim Student Association, Afrikaan Student Union, Armenian Students Association, and Samahang Pilipino. "I am troubled that the pledge sought to delegitimize educational trips offered by some organizations, but not others," Chancellor Jean Block of UCLA said. "I'm troubled that the pledge can reasonably be seen as trying to eliminate selected viewpoints from the discussion. If we shut out perspectives, if we silence voices, if we allow innuendo to substitute for reasoned exchange of ideas, if we listen only to those who already share our assumptions, truth gets lost. Our intellectual climate is impoverished and our community is diminished." Candidates representing Bruins United, the majority party on the student body, did not sign the anti-AIPAC and so on pledge. Those representing the other two parties did sign, including the student who went on to be elected student body president. A majority of those who were elected, however, did not sign. "I share Chancellor Block's concerns about students at UCLA who target any student seeking to participate in student government, who has a relationship or wants to travel to Israel on trips sponsored by certain groups," said University of California President and former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security and Governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano. Reaction to Chancellor Block's statement was strong on both sides. I thought it was great, said UCLA Undergraduate Student Association Council Internal Vice President Avi Oved. Anything to do with Israel has been tainted on campus, so this really helps create a better image of the pro-Israel community. In discussing the tense climate on campus this year, Oved said that he and fellow pro-Israel students on campus had been victims of what they consider to be hate speech, as well as threatening messages and phone calls. Bruins for Israel President Miriam Ashagian was equally supportive of Block's message. I think it's important for the campus to take what he said to heart and understand the implications statements like these have, she said. Supporters of the anti-Israel trip policy expressed disappointment with Chancellor Block's message. Block is misrepresenting the issue, said UCLA grad student and Students for Justice in Palestine member Rahim Kurwa. There are plenty of trips and conferences by Jewish groups and pro-Israel groups that no one thinks promote bigotry. He failed to mention the concerns that promoted this issue to begin with that the organizations listed have engaged in bigotry against communities represented on campus. In the wake of a petition filed by Students for Justice in Palestine, the UCLA Undergraduate Student Government's Judicial Board heard arguments last week on whether two elected student representatives who went to Israel on sponsored trips had violated the student government's ethics code. Representatives of the Jewish advocacy groups that sponsor trips to Israel vehemently reject the accusations that have been leveled at them by the joint statement and its supporters. These are educational trips for students. There is no political agenda, said AJCLA President Dean Schramm. Participants are exposed to the richness and complexity of region and meet with Israeli leaders, including Arab Israelis. They also go to the West Bank and meet with Palestinian Authority leaders. ADL Pacific Southwest Regional Director Amanda Susskind addressed the accusations in a statement. We are confident that any reasonable fact finder will conclude that there was no quid pro quo and that participating in such trips in no way constitutes conflict of interest as defined by the student bylaws, she said. Schramm characterized claims that his group is Islamophobic as ludicrous. Yael Steinberg, Hasbara Fellowship's West Coast Regional Advisor, said, "The assumption that someone who is pro-Israel must be Islamophobic is offensive." The campaign to divest from Israeli companies and companies that do business with Israel began in 2001 at UC Berkeley. Since 2012, symbolic resolutions have passed at UC Irvine, UC Berkeley, and UC Riverside. They were rejected at UCLA, UC Santa Barbara, UC Davis, UC Santa Cruz, Stanford, and San Diego State. The specific targets of the BDS campaigns in California have mostly been U.S. companies like Hewlett-Packard, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, Caterpillar, Lockheed Martin, and General Electric. Finally, in a follow-up to our discussion of the ADL's worldwide anti-Semitism report last week, a few voices weighed in on why and whether Greece is really by far the most anti-Semitic country in Europe. Greece is the cradle of democracy, but it captured that ignominious title because 69% of Greeks espoused anti-Semitic views, according to the ADL's large international study of anti-Semitism. Greece was on a par with Saudi Arabia, more anti-Semitic than Iran, and nearly twice as anti-Semitic as Europe's second most anti-Semitic country, France. On its surface, the poll suggests that anti-Semitism is running rampant in Greece. Much of the blame goes to the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party, which has found fertile ground for its extreme right-wing ideology in the ruins of Greece's economic crisis. In elections last week for Athens mayor, 16% of the vote went to the Golden Dawn spokesman Ilias Kassidaris, a man notorious for beating a female political opponent during a TV interview and for a large swastika tattooed on his shoulder. But both the ADL and Greece's small Jewish community caution the reality is more nuanced than the poll would suggest. There's a danger of sensationalizing it, a danger of overplaying the psychological impact of the poll, Michael Salberg, the ADL's director of international affairs, said. There needs to be real hard internal looks at the data and examining what the forces are at play. Greek Jewish leaders pointed out that despite widespread bigotry, Greece hasn't seen anti-Jewish violence, which has cropped up in some other European countries like France. Despite the polls showing high levels of anti-Semitism, it must be noted that in Greece over the last 4 years, we have not had any anti-Semitic violence against people or Jewish institutions, said Victor Eliezer, the Secretary General of the Central Board of Jewish Communities in Greece. This is not a poll about violence, but rather a survey of stereotypes, and yes, there are a lot of stereotypes among the Greek public, he said. While anti-Semitic violence in Greece doesn't exist, anti-Semitic viewpoints are frequently aired, particularly the notion that Jews control the global economy and politics. In 2012, when the Golden Dawn's leader read in the Greek parliament from the anti-Semitic forgery The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, that reading drew no condemnation from other lawmakers. Nor was there public condemnation when Golden Dawn slammed the recent visit by the American Jewish Committee's Executive Director David Harris as a trip to ensure further Jewish influence over Greek political issues and safeguard the interests of international loan sharks. Golden Dawn isn't alone in expressing these sentiments. Earlier this year, the left-wing Syriza Party's candidate for regional governor accused Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras of heading a Jewish conspiracy to visit a new Hanukkah against the Greeks. Well, at least they know the name of the holiday. Syriza reluctantly dropped that candidate. At the heart of that theory was a move last year by Samaras to shut the allegedly corrupt Hellenic Broadcasting Authority and replace it with a new Hellenic radio and television, known by its Greek acronym Nerit. According to the idiot from Golden Dawn, Nerit is derived from the Hebrew word ner for candle, which he linked to Hanukkah. Wow, that's creative. Even the mainstream political parties in Greece have long histories of using anti-Semitic tropes. Greeks are fond of conspiracy theories as they are steeped in conspiracy on a personal level. Euthymios Tsiliopoulos said, a journalist and political commentator, as so many things are conducted through under-the-table backroom deals, most naturally assume the whole world is run this way. As such, there's a willingness to believe that the hardships the country and its inhabitants have undergone through the centuries is due to the machinations of foreigners. It's easier to believe this than to fix the perennial ills plaguing Greek society. To be honest, that's a pretty accurate statement about the current origin of almost all contemporary anti-Semitism everywhere in the world. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We're delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. He's Deputy Israeli Consul General Uri Resnick. He's the Deputy Consul General in Los Angeles. You know, a minor posting, not an important city or anything. As an Angeleno, of course, I don't feel that way. Anyway, delighted to welcome you here. I want to talk a little bit about not just the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, but the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, has been working very hard. We've seen a lot about it on college campuses in the United States in particular. When I was at the Foreign Ministry a couple of years ago, the feeling was that the BDS movement was unpleasant, very bad publicity, but wasn't damaging Israel economically in any material way. Is that still true? What's Israel's perspective on BDS right now?
Well, that's still true. That's still true. We don't see any genuine, concrete economic damage.
It's not like the old Arab boycott in that sense.
It's not, and even that was probably more,
PR.
It was overblown. I mean, it was overstated. It existed, and it wasn't good or pleasant, as you say, or favorable, but it wasn't nearly as big a challenge as was sometimes made out to be. This is probably true of the BDS movement as well. I would say it's more than unpleasant. It's a concern because, you know, we have college campuses, which is the future of the United States, the future of any country, you know, all colleges. This is really where that next generation emerges, and it's in the formative stage where people form their opinions, and we're up against a systematic campaign by Israel's detractors, well-financed and well-planned and highly strategic, to tarnish Israel's image and to impress upon many American youth or youth elsewhere in the world, wherever it happens, to have negative opinions about Israel. Now, the strategy that we've adopted in Los Angeles, and I think others as well across the country, to deal with BDS, maybe ironically or not, but we call it BDS. We're fighting BDS with BDS. What do I mean by that?
I don't know.
What we call BDS is Build, Develop, Sustain. We're building scientific cooperation wherever we can. We are developing exchanges of students, of faculty, of scientific research projects, and we're sustaining that cooperation wherever, and so and as much as we can. We're doing that here today in Tucson as well, with the university over here, as we are doing in Phoenix and all across Southern California. We think that if these are symbolic gestures by student governments, most of which haven't passed, by the way, at least in our region in recent months, they're trying to call on people to divest or to detach themselves from Israel, our answer is to double down on cooperation with Israel, to build that cooperation. And I can tell you with authority that there is a tremendous thirst all across the Southwest, and it's true all across the country. If you look at the Cornell Technion Project in New York, you just want one big example. American universities and American faculty and American science wants Israeli science, and it wants Israeli technology. It wants this cooperation. That's the truth. That's where the real action is. And the more of that we do, the less significant all of this posturing at the student government level is.
Embarrassing question. It's not every country's prime minister that goes to jail for bribery. It happened just recently. There have been rumors about former Prime Minister Olmert for a very long time. There have been investigations since the 1980s. He was convicted a couple of months ago, sentenced recently. What's the official position? Is there one?
I'm not sure, yes. I don't know. There's a formulated official position. I would say it's a sad day. It's a sad day for Israel. No one wants to see a former prime minister or holders of senior office facing these kinds of circumstances. So it's very sad. On the other hand, it is an amazing and clear testament to the rule of law, which pertains in Israel, to Israel's very strong independent judiciary, and the fact that everyone in Israel is equal in front of the law. That is a very clear statement of which we can be proud in one sense, but still, that is still mixed. The feelings are mixed with the basic underlying discomfort at the fact that a former prime minister is facing this.
Happier question. Israel has long felt like it had a brain drain. Some of the best scientists went abroad. The rumors are now that that's kind of reversing, that people are coming back. Do you think this is true? Is there still a challenge for the Israeli economy, Israeli academic world?
Look, there's still a challenge. There's still a challenge just because there are some good institutions of higher learning outside Israel. Look, we take pride in the chemistry Nobel laureates who are at USC. They're in Los Angeles, and the laureate for physics also is in Chapman, Orange County, who holds a professorship at Tel Aviv University. So in the world of modern science, we're doing okay. And in the world of modern science and with communications and transportation the way they are, it's possible to still be, at least even those scholars who are outside Israel, still very much connected to Israel. But I wouldn't belittle the challenge here of a brain drain, as I say, because there are attractions outside, and Israel is a small country. Having said that, we should keep in mind that Israel has for many years, and still is, by far and away the world leader in terms of research and development per capita, and as a percentage of our gross domestic product, way ahead of other countries, including
the United States.
Yes,
that's right.
So we do invest a great deal of resources in this field of research and science, scientific and technological research and development. Ultimately, that's the best answer to brain drain. The best answer is to make Israel an even more attractive place for scholars to do their research. And I would say that overall the story is a rosier, is a good one. Consider the fact that in the last 10 years, if I recall correctly the figures, the Weizmann Institute of Science, I believe 3 years out of 10 by a very prestigious international ranking, was ranked number 1 in the world.
In the world.
As a place to be an academic and do research. And there are a few small competitors out there like Oxford and Harvard and Princeton, right? That speaks a lot. That speaks volumes for really what Israel's academia is about. And of course the Technion, the Hebrew University, Tel Aviv and Ben-Gurion, we don't have time on the show.
That's okay. It's good to cover it, even briefly. I want to thank Deputy Consul General Uri Gresnik for a great visit here on Two Jewish. And I have to say, we should remember, Israel is a very young country, 66 years old. This is a tremendous accomplishment in a short period of time. Thank you, and we look forward to talking again sometime.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock when our guest will really be Josh Vital, a Jewish author and one of three American hikers imprisoned in Iran for over a year and a half. His story is truly phenomenal. Don't miss hearing it next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our playout this morning comes for the Memorial Day weekend from Mandy Patinkin. It's a patriotic anthem from the great American Tin Pan Alley songsmith, the Jewish guy Irving Berlin, sung in Yiddish, and it's got a little baseball tossed in at the end. Perfect for Memorial Day weekend. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
America, land, wo sich lieb, stay